In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
It has been a terribly busy week and just not enough hours in the day working behind the scenes trying to save Oregon while also trying to prepare for this week's show. So I'm just going to once again forgo my usual opener and get right into it. Pastor Jackson Lahmeyer is a member of the White House Faith Advisory Board, a published author, and the lead pastor of Sheridan Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. As we head toward the 2026 midterm, his defining issue is the growing fight for the Christian vote, because both Republicans and now Democrats are pursuing Christian voters, and that definitely got our attention. Pastor, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be with you.
Yeah, so that is really interesting. It's something, you know, that we've had shows on about the past, activating the church and getting them out of the pews and into the voting booth and getting them involved. And along those lines, I saw a YouTube clip of yours on Real America's Voice. It was from a few years ago, and you were discussing how a lot of pastors were just not supporting Trump. In fact, we did a show or two about that ourselves, where there were some estimates that up to 10 million, tens of millions of Christian conservatives were just not going to vote for him, or at least sit out the election entirely. Eventually, they came around, not all of them, I don't think, but certainly large numbers of them. But what was especially surprising, about that is it was evangelicals that were saying they weren't going to support Trump. And I could see it if it was some woke, far-left denomination spinoff, but these were evangelicals. Trump supports pretty much all of their core issues, far more than any president going all the way back to Ronald Reagan. A lot of them gave lip service to the evangelicals, but very few of them actually took concrete actions that demonstrated support for those issues. Talk to us about that. Why were they initially against him running for re-election in 2024, and what eventually made them come around?
Well, I think there were several things. Obviously, the media's spin cycle on President Trump when he left office in 2020, remember, he was framed as the instigator of, you know, the great insurrection, the insurrection that had no weapons, but it was an insurrection. And that Trump was the guy that did that. And you remember, he was just demonized and vilified during that time. And, you know, I think people just were kind of like questioning, well, should we support him? And so I don't know why so many evangelicals were on the fence, say, between 2020 and 2024. I really couldn't answer why. I just knew that was the case, which is why, you know, we had Pastors for Trump, which was to mobilize the evangelical vote, because without evangelicals voting for President Trump, he was not going to win in 2024. So we just knew we had to get high voter turnout. And thankfully, you know, we did. I think what probably engaged evangelicals the most was I think we took that argument that you just presented to them, in the sense of, you've never had a more pro-Christian president in at least our lifetime than President Trump, who moved the needle for the Christian agenda, if that's what you want to call it, more than President Trump, and all the craziness that was happening at the same time in regards to, you know, Christian values, everything that we believe in, well, the Democratic platform was against, and everything that we are against, the Democratic platform was for. And so it was, I think, a converging of those things. And I also think that the failed assassination attempt, the miracle that was, you know, what, a millimeter? I think for maybe a lot of Christians, that was as if, okay, this might be a sign from the heavens that he should be dead, but that was an obvious miracle.
Yeah.
And so maybe God's hand is on him, therefore I should support him. I think that really moved the needle for many.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And I'd like to come back to that Trump assassination at some point. But part of the shows that we did when we had a pastor on discussing those, it was difficult for me to understand why Christians would not want to be involved with politics, because you're expected to be the salt of the earth. And to remove yourself from society on a core thing like politics, to me, that just doesn't make sense. I mean, how does the church expect to influence politics and society, since politics controls society in many aspects? How do you expect to change politics if you're not involved in it?
That was a $1 million question I had, right? If a room is really, really dark and you're going to complain about how dark the room is, and you happen to have like a flashlight or a candle and you don't use it, I mean, why are you complaining about how dark the room is?
You know,
maybe everyone else in the room doesn't have a flashlight or the light and they're in darkness. But if you have it and you're complaining about it, you might be part of the problem here. So I never comprehended, per se, we shouldn't be involved in politics. Obviously, I comprehend our hope is not in a political party. Our hope is not in a political candidate. Our hope is in Jesus Christ alone. However, he has mandated us to be salt and light, to occupy until he returns, that we are ambassadors. And you know what an ambassador is supposed to do? An ambassador represents a foreign country in a particular land. So an ambassador is from another nation in a foreign nation trying to influence the government where he lives on behalf of the government of where he is from. We are not of this world. We are not from this world. We're in it, but we're coming from a different kingdom. Ours is the kingdom of God. And we're to influence the kingdom of this earth on behalf of the kingdom of where we come from. That's why we're called ambassadors. Mm-hmm. We are to influence the world that we live in. That doesn't mean that we adopt the customs or the behaviors, but we are to have influence as ambassadors. What's the point of having an ambassador?
Yeah.
If they're not going to influence the government that they're working with. So yeah, I think you have to be. I think you have to be involved.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean we put our hope and our faith and our trust in politics or anything like that, but to not be involved, well, that's problematic for the rest of the country.
Yeah, I just don't understand it. And sometimes trying to understand Christians can be very difficult. Just ask any Christian. So let's come back to that. We'll have more with Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer, the co-founder of Pastors for Trump, after this. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer. He's the founder of Pastors for Trump and also the pastor for the Sheridan Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So what exactly is that church? It sounds like it's a heritage center of some sort.
Well, Sheridan Church happens to be founded on Sheridan Road. So you know how you have streets, and it was on Sheridan Road, and that's how we got the name. There's nothing spiritual at all about Sheridan. Other than that was the street the church was founded on.
There's a Sheridan out here in Oregon, and I was wondering if there's a connection. I think he was a general, is that correct? Yeah. So ask my producer.
Yeah,
she actually grew up there, so she had to know. So, well, anyway, getting back to Christians, as I said, going out of that break there, we can be sometimes a bit hard to understand. And I have to say this, you know, in light of our discussion in that first segment about evangelicals maybe backing away from supporting Trump, it's sad to say, and I've seen this down through the years, that sometimes Christians are just not very good political allies. And in his first term, Trump stuck his neck out to get conservatives on the Supreme Court, and boom, Roe v. Wade gets overturned in 2022. Pro-life is a big issue for a lot of evangelicals and Catholics and many others. And yet when they had the chance to stand by him in 2024, after he had supported one of their major issues, they were talking about turning their back on him. I mean, how did they justify that in your discussions with them? Turning their back on somebody that had helped them on one of their own most important issues. I mean, if you really want to get into it, did I miss the part in the Bible where you should help your enemies but betray your friends when they need you?
Yeah. It's wild. It was hard to really put together, right? Because, you know, we've had so many elected officials promise us the world and deliver on nothing, right? And then we have President Trump, who made us promises, but then delivered on every one of those promises. And yet we turned on him during that season between 2020 and the 2024 election, which was very odd to me because we had never had a president as welcoming to Christians as President Donald Trump and our agenda. And so I think that does say something about the flakiness of Christians. You know, we sometimes call Christians granola because they're really flaky. You know, they hop around from church to church. So I think that kind of exposed that little granola mentality in way too many Christians.
Hmm. Well, let's talk about Trump a little bit because we had mentioned that there with the Butler assassination, and there did seem to be a genuine change in him. In his first term, he talked, you know, about church and, you know, and Christians, but there was an element of that that, you know, there was a genuineness to it, but it didn't come across as something that was really a core part of him. But then after Butler, you could really see a legitimate change there. So I know that you're part of the White House Faith Advisory Board, so you've seen him up close and personal. What is your take on his faith?
Oh, my goodness. Well, you know, the Butler situation, I think that would take anybody. Whenever you survive a bullet to the head, right, I think that would shake anybody. And it did. It really woke up President Trump in that moment that he'll be the first to tell you that God is the one who saved his life, that he believes with a mission and a purpose. And so President Trump is adamant. He wants pastors at the White House. Although we pastors serve him no political gain, right? He's already elected, so there's not much more we could do for him other than what he's asked us to do. That is to pray and to worship at the White House. He wants prayer and worship at the White House, which is why in his first year, we had brought up over 2,000 pastors to the White House. And that's at the direction of the President of the United States. So that tells you something. Why does he want pastors at the White House? Why does he want pastors praying for him? Because I think he recognizes and he understands the importance of it because of the spiritual battle that he has been thrust into. He's kind of like at the center of it, you know? And he has recognized, according to his own words, we don't just want God in America. He has said we desperately need God to be involved in the United States of America. And that's powerful when the leader of the free world says something like that.
Yeah. Oh, it's incredibly, incredibly powerful. So you have a book, Chasing After the Wind, and I, just from the title and the description that I read, that book would seem to address this next question. So when it comes to Christians, I've noticed that a lot of them use their faith sometimes as a defensive shield against reality. And I just had a conversation about this very topic with somebody the other day who has told me for years that God called them to, I'll just say pursue a certain job, that God spoke to them. That was their words. But they have already failed twice at that, and they're trying a third time. So I think we all like to think and believe that we're being led in certain directions by God's hand. But it seems to me that if you keep failing at something, maybe you didn't hear things right the first time, especially if your pursuit of something ends up letting other people down as well. So how does a Christian know for sure that, yes, God really is talking to you and leading you in a certain direction? Shouldn't success come at some point? I just don't think that God wants you to chase the wind. It just seems that it should be his will that at some point you would succeed.
Yeah.
If that pursuit is genuine.
Right, right. Well, how do you hear God's voice? That's probably the number one question I get asked. As a pastor, is how can I, one, does God speak? And two, how can I hear him? And so I believe God still speaks. I don't believe that God's lost his voice. I believe he's still speaking today. And he has different channels. You remember growing up as a kid using walkie-talkies? You could talk to somebody, but you had to be on the right channel, right? So if you were on channel 4 and they were on channel 2, you could press the button and you could talk into it, but they wouldn't hear you and you wouldn't hear them. So God has channels that he speaks through. And the first one and the most obvious one and the one he speaks to us the most through is the Bible. You know, people always say, I haven't heard from God in a long time. Well, if you open up the Bible, that is God speaking to you. So you can actually, isn't that an amazing thing? You can hear from God anytime you want to hear from God. All you got to do is open up the Bible. and God speaks through his word. That's the main way. But there's other ways that God speaks to people. God speaks through visions, dreams. He speaks through his loud, booming voice that will scare you to death, or that still small voice that you have to learn to discern. Is that the voice of God, or is that something else? And then God also speaks to us through people, that God will give people maybe a word to speak into our lives that we needed to hear in that moment. And so those are some of the channels that God uses. Once you identify, okay, these are the channels God speaks through, well, how can I test?
Yes.
Is this God's voice? Is this, you know, my own imagination? Or maybe, you know, is this the enemy trying to deceive you?
Yeah.
Yeah, trying to deceive me and masking it as, you know, the Lord or something like that. And so I think there's a couple ways that you can test. Number one, the obvious one, anything that you hear, anything that someone says to you, if it contradicts the word of God, it is not God. So God's not going to contradict himself. He's not going to say one thing in his word and then whisper something to you late at night. That you can rule out immediately. God's voice will also never tempt you to sin. So God's not going to tempt you to violate what he has told you not to do or to do. But something I've learned is that God's voice is often confirmed through God's people. Now, they're not always foolproof here, but usually if I think that God is speaking to me, I usually will run it by some spiritual, mature people that I trust. You know, what's your take on this? You know, will you pray about this for me? I think there's like wisdom in the counsel of many. And so, you know, in regards to how can you rule out it being God's voice or not? Well, if God tells you to do something and you do it and the result doesn't take place of what God said would take place, well, then you probably didn't hear from God. You know what I'm saying?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's like that Bible verse, by their fruits you shall know them. And I think it's the same for the fruits of your own labor.
Right.
If there is no fruit, if it's just not happening, then it's probably not the calling that you thought it was. So, okay, we are way past our usual time, so we're going to quickly jump into another break here. Everyone stay with us. More with Pastor Jackson Lawmire. And welcome back. We're talking today to Pastor Jackson Lawmire. He's the co-founder of Pastors of Trump. He's also the lead pastor of the Sheridan Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And he's also worked in this past for Christ for All Nations Ministry and served as the state coordinator for the Billy Graham Evangelistic Association. So you've got a long history there dealing with Christians and reaching out to Christians, bringing people to Christianity. And that's one of the things we want to start morphing into is the discussion that got you here, which is as you look forward to the midterms, that both Republicans and Democrats are trying to pursue the Christian vote. But before we leave that last topic there about Christians and knowing when you're on the right track, as I was listening to you, what I think I'm hearing is that there's essentially a grounding in reality. I mean, it's one thing to think that God told you something and that you ought to pursue something, but if there's no grounding in reality for it, if you're not meeting with success, that ought to tell you that perhaps you're on the wrong path. And conversely, looking what happened to Trump, you know, he's not out there saying God spoke to him, or at least not that I've ever heard him say that. Instead, how he is basing things on is something that happened in reality with that attempted assassination, that miracle turn of his head, just that split second later, and he would have been dead. So with the first, it's kind of a belief looking for confirmation in reality versus something that happened in reality as confirmation.
Yeah. I think obviously fruit matters, right? What is happening in real life does matter. That doesn't mean that you're going to be successful at every single thing you do. Probably not. We're all human beings, and sometimes we fall flat on our faces and we get right back up. But if God is speaking to you, God says, if you do X or Y, I'll do Z. Well, if you do X or Y and God doesn't do Z, then you didn't hear from God, because God cannot break his promise or his word. And that's what you have to get down to.
Well, as far as Trump's doing and actions, one of the things that he has done is establish this White House Faith Advisory Board. So talk to us a little bit about that. And why did he do that? Obviously, he made a commitment to that during the campaign. But what is the purpose of that office?
Yeah, so President Trump, he told the pastors during the campaign that, if you all get me elected, I'll do something no president has ever done, which is to create a faith office in the White House. And he kept his campaign promise. And the purpose of the office mainly, now it's multifaceted, but its main purpose is to make sure that religious liberty is being defended. Because unfortunately, under Barack Obama and accelerated under Joe Biden, there was a targeting of people of faith, especially conservative Christians, from the IRS, the DOJ, the yep. ATF, and the FBI.
Yep. And I think a lot of people forget that.
Yes, yes. And so President Trump said that cannot happen in this country. Just as nobody should get in between a person and their doctor, well, nobody should get in between a person and God, especially the U.S. government. So that's the primary role of the faith office, is to make sure that our government is not violating your right to freely worship God.
Republicans have pursued the Christian vote. And I want to come back to that White House Faith Advisory Board a little bit later. But as long as I can remember, Republicans have pursued the Christian vote. Democrats, probably a little less so. And I hate to say it, but sometimes Democrats can be a real embarrassment to their alleged Catholic faith. I'm looking at you, Nancy and Joe. But Democrats openly pursuing Christians is a little bit new to me. I mean, are they seeing something in the polls that would show kind of an opening there? Why the sudden change there? What's going on?
Well, I think they realize the largest voting bloc in America is evangelical Christians. And 9 out of 10 evangelicals who voted in 2024, 9 out of 10 voted for Donald Trump over Kamala Harris. So you have the largest voting bloc in America breaking 90% towards one party. And so Democrats are targeting Christians, and they're targeting Christians by trying to pull on heartstrings. Well, wasn't Jesus a refugee? Wasn't Jesus an illegal immigrant when his parents took him down to Egypt? What about how you're supposed to treat the four? They use certain passages out of the Bible to try to demonize what the Trump administration is doing in their effort to, say, target Christians to come towards a more liberal, progressive politic.
So, is it genuine that Democrats are pursuing these Christians, or is it lip service? I mean, how do you trust it when Joe Biden was just using the government to go after Christians? I mean, has there been some conversion on the road to Damascus I missed?
I don't think so. I think it's genuine that they want your vote, but I don't think it's genuine that they care about your values. I think they despise Christian values. I think the Democratic Party hates God and the things of God, which is why they've completely removed everything about God from their platform and have added everything that goes against God. And so, yeah, I don't think it's a genuine, we love you Christians and we want to include your worldview. I don't think that is true, but they know they need the vote and they don't have it.
Yeah. Well, I think what you just said is really key there is it. I think if it is genuine, then they would start incorporating more of the Christian worldview. I don't see that happening. In fact, if anything, they seem determined to go the opposite with all of their ideologies.
Yeah, I mean, they've completely gone away from a Christian worldview, and they have embraced the antithesis of a Christian worldview. That's why I say the two Christianity and the Democratic Party have irreconcilable value systems.
Yes. Oh, I totally think so. Okay, it is time for a break. When we come back, I want to continue this, especially whether or not you are seeing any evidence of evangelicals or other Christian groups breaking for Democrats. Stay with us. More with Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer. He's the co-founder of Pastors for Trump. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show. We're talking today to Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer. He's the founder of Pastors for Trump and also the pastor for the Sheridan Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. And we've been talking about the Democrats suddenly deciding that, gee, maybe all these Christians might be a good voting bloc for us. You know, the more I think about it, I just don't see it happening. Are you seeing any evidence of evangelicals or other Christian groups suddenly saying, oh yeah, let's all vote Democrat this time?
No, not at all. It's one of those things that the selling point just, it cannot work. So what would have to happen in order to regain evangelical Christians back into the Democratic Party, the Democratic Party would have to change its core of what it's promoting, who it is. And that's not going to happen, I don't think, anytime soon. Maybe they lose enough elections, and then they'd be forced to change. But if the Democratic Party holds to its current platform values, they will see no increase in evangelical Christians coming over to their side. Hmm. If they change, well, then obviously you have a more open door opportunity. But currently, they're irreconcilable between being an evangelical Christian and being a Democrat. They're irreconcilable. They just don't work.
Hmm. Well, it'll be interesting to see what, I mean, the Democrats excel at marketing, and so it wouldn't surprise me that they're going to go down this path if they think they can pick up a few votes, meaning they can take those votes from the Republicans. I guess I imagine this is going to be somewhat like when Hillary goes to speak somewhere and she starts pandering in a Southern church and takes on a black accent.
Right.
So now the Democrats are going to just start throwing around a few more Bible verses every time they speak. I just don't see that being persuasive. So do you get any sense there's something, you know, another part of the plan coming?
Well, I think they were probably banking on, speaking of Democrats, the invasion that happened with illegal immigration of being a new voting bloc, a new set of voters that they would literally have for, you know, that lifetime. And then obviously, as that has been chipped away at, and those individuals are starting to be sent home, you know, they're losing potential voters. And so now, as you tighten up voting systems, voting regulations, try to stop the waste, abuse, fraud type stuff going on there, they've targeted, you know, Christians. And I don't think it's going to work. That's just my personal opinion.
No, I don't think so either. So pending some kind of actual plan, some kind of actually putting faith into action, or putting action behind your faith, whichever way you want to look at it, I just don't see this working for the Democrats. In fact, if anything, it makes them look even more fake than before.
So they come off very not genuine.
Yeah. Well, I guess we'll have to wait and see. I just don't see it. So, getting back to the Trump White House there, and the Faith Office, one of the things that was formed, I think, as part of that was the Religious Liberty Commission, and this is designed to safeguard religious freedoms. So I'm actually genuinely surprised there has not been more pushback from the Democrats on that, because the thing that you constantly hear when talking about Christians is usually there needs to be a separation of church and state. But of course, anybody that understands the Constitution knows that it wasn't designed to keep religion out of government. It was the other way around. It was to keep government out of religion. Why hasn't there been more blowback by the Democrats on that?
Well, I think there has been a ton of blowback. I think they've been very upset about it. But they just haven't been able to, you know, defeat this for many different reasons, because separation of church and state was meant to protect the church from the state coming off of what was taking place in Europe. But to say that the church can have no involvement in the state, well, that would be to single out a particular group of people and say you can't be involved. And then you would have to, well, okay, what about every other industry or every other arena, whatever it may be. And so there has been tremendous pushback and blowback on it, but they don't have a legal case for it. And you know, so thankfully we have a president that's very strong and hasn't bowed down to their crying and yelling and hollering.
Yeah, well, if there's been blowback, to be honest, I just haven't seen that. I don't know, maybe I'll start looking more for it, but so far I haven't really seen that. You mentioned about protecting religious faith, and that's always kind of a difficult thing for somebody in Trump's position, because that's part of America's founding, is freedom of religion. But sometimes that can lead to some issues themselves, because there's a growing number of Muslims in our country. And I think personally that's worrisome. You know, if a Muslim comes here and is genuinely interested in becoming a part of America and wants to embrace America, that by definition means you're going to be embracing Judeo-Christian heritage and that Judeo-Christian values, because America could not exist in a Muslim country if it was founded on Islam. There is no freedom of religion. There is no freedom of speech. You cannot criticize the prophet. I'm looking at the clock here. This is going to take a bit. More with the co-founder of Pastors for Trump. We're talking today to Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer. We'll pick up right where we left off. And welcome back. We're talking today to Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer. He's the pastor at Sheridan Church and also the co-founder of Pastors for Trump. And so going out of that break, we started to talk about Islam and Muslims here. And I started to say that America could never have been founded as it is today, or certainly not as it was originally founded, in an Islamic country, because they don't believe in the rights the same way that we do. So if a Muslim comes here, I'm fine if they're okay with that and they embrace freedom of religion, that you're not trying to convert me and you're not trying to, actually more to the point, it's not that they're trying to convert me, they demand that you be converted or that they want to impose Sharia law on everyone. We had a couple of shows with a cultural jihadist that talked a lot about that, and he got converted to Christianity, and he's out there now. Qoom Ministries, if you want to go look them up, Koome Ministries, and we'll link that up on today's show page, which is 16-10 at ispyradio.com. So as far as the White House Faith Advisory Board, are they concerned, or is Trump concerned with the increasing number of Muslims coming into our country? Do they understand that Islam is a very different religion than Christianity? Are they concerned about any of that?
Oh, yeah. Listen, the recognition that Islam inherently cannot coexist with the United States of America.
No.
Because Islam is more than just a mere religion. Islam is a political system.
Yes.
That is incompatible with the U.S. Constitution. And so you can't have two sets of laws or two sets of governing authorities within the structure of our country. And to your point, you know, if a Muslim wants to assimilate to Western culture, a Christian culture that we have, the values that we have, and assimilate, that's one thing. But unfortunately, I would say most have no desire to assimilate, but to rather influence and eventually take over.
Yes.
And that's the end game goal of Islam in the first place. Islam wants to have a global caliphate where Sharia law is implemented across the globe.
Yes.
That's the game. That's the goal. And that wouldn't work very well here in the United States of America. I don't think our overprivileged white liberal women would be too pleased living under Sharia law, even though they're advocating for it.
And that's the crazy part of it, too. It's not surprising, I guess, in some ways, that some uber left Democrat doesn't understand things. It's based on feelings, not on logic. And they're advocating for Islam and openness and diversity and all the rest, and have no idea that the ultimate goal is to do away with the way of life that you think that you're living. They would absolutely be demanded that they start wearing burqas and everything else. And how did they not know that? It's stunning to me that anybody could not know that.
You know, I wish I had an answer to give.
Yeah, well, we're dealing with a liberal mindset here, so it is pretty incomprehensible.
It's hard to fathom why a woman in particular would advocate for Islam. It's hard to imagine. That's kind of like, you know, an African American advocating for slavery. It's just like, okay, that doesn't really make sense. I don't understand why, but they're equivalent.
Yeah. Well, you look at what happened over in the UK. I genuinely believe that Prime Minister Starmer's reluctance to get involved with the invasion of Iran and to deny access to UK military bases is because he was afraid of the Muslims that are already there in his country. And you look around the country, they have some major cities that are, they've got mayors are Islamic. In fact, one of the other interesting things, right, that just happened is that I forget the actual name of it. It's a far left political party. And they actually won one of the smaller elections because they reached out to the Islamic voters. They were putting out political advertising in an Arabic language, and they ended up winning.
Right.
So I think Starmer was, frankly, he comes across more as a hostage victim. He's already let the Muslims inside the gate, and now he can't do anything about it.
Yeah, I think we're so boxed in. Europe is a warning of what we're getting ready to experience if we don't get this thing together.
Yeah, I think the people see it happening. I think certainly more and more people are seeing it happening. And yet, on the other side of that, you've got the politicians welcoming them, embracing them, and terrified to say, you know, maybe it's time you guys go home because you're not fitting in here.
Right. No, I'm with you.
Okay, well, let's go and take a break. Coming up, we're going to talk about getting churches involved in politics. Where does that start? In the pew or the pulpit? More with Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer after this. He's the co-founder of Pastors for Trump. And welcome back. We're in our final segment now with Pastor Jackson Lawmeyer. He's a member of the White House Faith Advisory Board, a published author, and the lead pastor of Sheridan Church in Tulsa, Oklahoma. So speaking of published author, you have a couple of books out there, and we just want to make sure that we mention these. To be clear, I have not had a chance to read these books. I genuinely like to read books before I start talking about them. However, we'll have to have you back to talk about these sometime in the future. So your two books are Chasing After the Wind. I mentioned that previously. And then also your other book is Divided, Breaking Free from the Double Life. So talk to us a little bit about both of those.
Well, you know, the first book, Chasing After the Wind, is about why nobody is catching what everybody is chasing. And the one thing that everybody is chasing, whether you are young or old, rich or poor, everyone wants to be happy. That's why we do what we do. Why do we do what all we do? It makes me happy. I want to be happy. Unfortunately, though, happiness is like the wind. It's fleeting. You never actually catch it. That's why compare it to the wind. You know, it's something you just chase, but you never actually fully grasp. And so how can you be happy? And you can be. You actually can have true happiness and joy. But it's not through the things that we're told, money or fame or sex or whatever it may be. And so that book is all about how do you catch the wind? How do you get true joy in your life? And the other book, Divided, is the more up close and personal book. All of us have an inner civil war happening on the inside of us. We're all divided. We all have two me's inside of me. And how do you break free from living a double life? Nobody wants to live a double life, be one way in front of people, but a different way in private. But that's difficult to do. And we all have these inner struggles. And one moment I can be an angel, and the next minute I can be a beast. I can be a saint one day and a great sinner the next. And so how do you live a consistent life? And that's what that book is all about. How to overcome the double life, that secret sin life that is there. Hmm. And so we've gotten tremendous reviews on both books about finding true joy and happiness and then living free from the double life. And I really enjoyed writing both of them. I think they blessed me more than probably anyone who's read them.
Hmm. So where do people find those? I had looked on Amazon and I couldn't find them there. Are they not available on Amazon?
Yeah, they are. You just type in my name, Jackson Lawmeyer, and both of those books should pop up on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Walmart, Target. But you can also get them at my website, jacksonlawmeyer.com. And if you go there, you'll get a signed copy. If you buy it on Amazon, No signature.
Well, I will look again on Amazon. I looked under your name. I looked under the titles, and they would not come up. It would not be the first time that Amazon has blocked conservative books. Just so how people know that spelled Jackson is just the regular old Jackson, like Stonewall Jackson. Lahmyer is L-A-H-M-E-Y-E-R, L-A-H-M-E-Y-E-R. So JacksonLahmyer.com, and we'll put links to his site, the book links there, and also the Amazon links, in case those ever show up. And those will be in the show notes section on today's show, which will be iSpyRadio/16-10. Just scroll down the page and you'll find those show notes. So as far as getting churches involved and pastors that would like to get their churches engaged in politics, how does that usually start, in your opinion? Does that usually start in the pews with Christians saying, hey, pastor, we need to get involved? Or does it start with the pastor saying, hey, church, we got to get involved?
Well, I think it should start with the pastor saying, hey, church, we got to get involved. Pastor's the spiritual leader of the house. But sometimes it starts, you know, with the people in the pews saying, hey, pastor, I think we ought to get involved. But the proper way, the one you would hope for, would be the first one.
Yeah. If it does start at the top, for pastors who would like their churches to get more involved in politics and just aren't sure where to get started, how do they get started?
I think you start local. You know, we can get caught up on national races, which is fantastic, but I think you start local. As a church, you say, hey, you know what? We got a lot of kids at our church. They go to public schools. Let's make sure we're involved in who's running for school board. It'd be great to have somebody from our church run for school board. We'll support you. Get local. School board, city council, your mayor's office, those things. Those have the biggest direct impact in our lives and in our churches, by the way, is who's the mayor, who's on the city council, who's on the school board. Those elections impact us more directly than who's sitting in the White House.
As far as pastors getting involved, what do you hear from pastors when they start introducing that idea? I think we ought to get involved. We would like to get some Christians on these school boards and so on and so forth. What do they often hear from those churches?
Well, I think you'll get a mixed reaction, especially if it's fresh or it's new. Nobody likes change, especially Christians. So, you know, you'll get a mixed reaction. You'll have some that rejoice and shout, and then you'll have others that'll be critical. And you just have to make a decision. Is this the right thing to do? Which I think it is. Then you do the right thing regardless of whether people are critical or not.
And as far as church members are concerned, if there's some of them that would like to get more involved in politics, how do they overcome objections from the pastor? Because one of the things I consistently hear from pastors is that if we start talking politics, we'll lose our nonprofit status.
Well, one, the IRS last summer made it very clear that churches can endorse from behind the pulpit and not have any fear of losing their tax-exempt status. So the IRS has publicly stated that. That came out last summer. Two, I mean, even if you do lose your tax-exempt status, doing the right thing, you do the right thing because it's the right thing. You're not going to lose your tax-exempt status. But I hate when I hear, you know, that being like hung over us. Like, we know this is the right thing to do, but we don't want to lose our tax-exempt status. That's the wrong motive. And so the good news is, though, the IRS has made it very clear you will not lose your tax-exempt status. And so, therefore, that excuse has no longer any validity.
As far as Republicans reaching out to evangelicals, we got about a minute here. And what are some things that they can do to improve that relationship to attract, well, not just evangelicals, but Christians of all stripes? What can they do to be reaching out better to them?
Is your question, what can
Republicans do? Yeah.
Republicans do?
Yeah.
Well, I think the most important thing that Republicans do is not do what Republicans do all too well. Promise the world, don't deliver on it.
Yes.
I think Republicans, listen, if we say we're going to do this, then we have to honor our word and we have to do it. And so but that goes both ways. You know, what angers, you know, Democrat voters is, you know, their people promise the world, don't deliver. What angers Republican voters, we promise the world, don't deliver on it. So Republicans have to have clear messaging, clear promises. But then when you get in office, that's the thing. When you get in office, you actually have to do it. Otherwise, people lose enthusiasm. People lose confidence. They don't vote.
Yeah.
And if they don't vote, then you don't win.
Yep, absolutely. And that's kind of a nice circle back around to what we were saying earlier about the interaction of faith and actions and tie into real life events. They've got to be tied together. Your words have to be backed up by actions, and faith is great, but it really needs to be demonstrated by actions and results in reality. That's how you build trust. Pastor, I want to thank you so much for your time today. This has been really insightful. We'd love to have you back on sometime.
Absolutely. I really appreciate it.
You know, when it comes to faith, I don't have a lot of faith in Democrats being serious about faith. You have to show something. There has to be some kind of grounding in reality. And not only do most Democrat policies have no grounding in reality, neither do their words. But they are very clever about the words they use. They can easily trick people because too many people don't take the time to learn about important issues, like America's founding. And our schools, as we know, are letting us down in that regard. To get politics right, to get your political party right, you first need to get your relationship with God right. Our founders knew that. But you also need to be involved. Don't just complain from the sidelines. There is plenty of things to be doing. If you don't like what your party's doing, get involved, become part of it. Learn to work with them and become part of the changes that you'd like to see. This year in Oregon, I think, is the Republicans' best chance at winning the governor's race since the last time they won it. Democrats have destroyed this economy. They are chasing businesses out. The no gas tax bill will either be directly on the ballot or indirectly by pointing out in the voters' pamphlet that the Democrat candidate voted for it and then tried to get around the voters, that pesky democracy thing, by changing the date when people could vote on it. Plus, there are other tax referendums being prepared that will likely be on the November's ballot. IP 28, the insane far-left animal rights bill, will likely qualify, and people will turn out to shoot that one down. With the right candidate, we may even take the U.S. Senate seat from Jeff the Potato Merkley. There is a lot for Republicans to get excited about because there is a lot to get people to go vote. With the right candidates running, combined with all of the other issues and problems that Oregonians are facing because of the Democrats, Republicans could draw enough Democrats and NEVs across the aisle to finally break the Democrats' stranglehold on Oregon. I just don't see how Oregon survives another 4 years of this Democrat disaster. But it will take you to stand up. Because as we say every week, just like faith, the best information is you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a faith that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a faith that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.